A house is made of wood and stone, but only love can make a home. Welcome to the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, helping you make your home into one you'll love even more. Here are your hosts, Dan Hansen and Betsy Thompson.
Well, the cold weather's here,
officially. Yes, it is.
I'm Dan Hansen.
And I'm Betsy Thompson.
And I do want to say that we're glad to have you back as well, sounding more like yourself and less like the croaky little frog that you were last week.
Hey, there was nothing I could do about that. No. By the next day, I had zero voice. You had everything that I had left.
Betsy gave it her all last week.
I did.
And definitely by the last segment, she was basically just saying yes.
Yeah, that was all I could get out.
That's all she could do.
Yeah, my throat was very sore.
We're glad you're here.
Yeah, so am I. Because today, I want to talk about stripping wallpaper. It's something that people absolutely hate doing. They think it's a horrible thing to have to do.
It normally is.
Yes, but that's because they don't know the tips and tricks that will make it a little bit easier. Today, we want to share those with you.
Before we get to that, though, we've got a fun segment.
Yes.
And it's about Christmas gifts.
It is.
And Betsy and I each picked what we think are some of the best Christmas gifts, home improvement related, for various price ranges.
Right.
And we're going to share them with you. We have not shared them with each other yet. So
no.
I don't know what she picked. She doesn't know what I picked. We'll all find out together. And that's coming up in a little bit.
And in about 15 minutes or so, we're going to be in the studio with Larry Bergman from Bergman Power Equipment. We're going to talk about snowblowers. And yes, I do realize it's a little late, but there are procrastinators out there like myself who need a snowblower. And so this information is going to be very helpful to all of us.
But before we get to that, we want to talk about one of the greatest sources of frustration that we see in our customers at Repco Light on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And it has to do with staining wood.
Yeah.
See, a lot of people get into a project and they get ready to stain whatever they're doing, their trim or their doors or cabinets or whatever. And the wood doesn't take the stain in the way they anticipated.
Right.
And things start to get really, really frustrating and really, really tense very quickly because there's a lot of money involved and it's hard to keep going over pieces of wood with stain and get to the color you want.
Right.
You know, it's not like paint where you can repaint and no big deal,
right,
except for the labor. Mm. With stain, it's more complicated. One instance that really will make the point that I remember from years back is a customer who put cherry doors throughout the entire home, and then to save money, trimmed everything with poplar.
Oh, no.
Yep, they were told that the graining in the poplar is similar to the cherry, and with the right stain, it'll look identical.
No.
It doesn't happen.
No.
Poplar doesn't take stain the same way, and what she ended up with was a lot of trim that looked very dead and flat compared to the beautiful cherry doors that they had.
Right.
It's a very frustrating experience. We want to help you avoid that.
Yes, we see it play out all the time in our stores, maybe not on that grand of a scale, but in smaller little projects. So our goal is to help you avoid all of this. And we think that the best place to start is at the very beginning. There's a common misconception out there that hardwoods will stain great and softwoods are just going to be terrible. That is a misconception, like I said, because hardwood and softwood are just classifications. Hardwoods are classified as anything that had leaves at one time, and softwoods are anything that had needles. So let's take the example of balsa wood. Technically, it had leaves. It's classified as a hardwood, but we all know the density of it is very soft, and it's going to be terrible to stain. Pine, on the other hand, is classified as a softwood, but it's way more dense and is going to stain way better than balsa wood.
Exactly. So the point of all of that is to just tell you don't rely on the classifications when determining whether a wood is going to stain well or
right.
not. You're much better off to understand some of the basic woods that we run into and just know their limitations.
Mm-hmm.
And let's start with oak.
Yeah.
Don't have to say too much about it. It was very popular in the past.
Mm-hmm. It'll come back.
It'll come back. And it'll come back because it's really, really easy to stain.
Yes.
It's probably the easiest wood to get consistent, beautiful results with every single time. The only thing you struggle with oak is that some of it is redder and some of it is whiter.
Right. Cherry is a beautiful wood. It's expensive. The thing that people run into, and they don't realize generally when they're picking cherry, is that cherry varies a lot. You can have one piece that is beautiful to stain, and you can have another piece that ends up very blotchy to stain. And you can't tell just by looking at it. You have to wait until you actually put the stain on.
Or apply like a mineral spirit wash or like denatured alcohol or something.
To try it.
Just to make it wet so you can see what it does. And then you can tell whether the boards are going to be blotchy or not. But
right.
it can be a real bugger to stain.
Yes, it can be.
Maple is the same thing. You get some pieces that will stain up beautifully.
Right.
Other pieces absorb it more.
Yep.
And it gets blotchy. It's great with clear coats, though.
Yes, it is.
Clear coats look beautiful on maple.
Right. Poplar, as you were saying before, looks...
the bane of our existence.
It is.
And anybody who does any wood finishing at all knows.
Yes.
They're groaning right now. Stop using poplar.
Right. It's great if you're going to paint it or put a lacquer or something like that on it. But the problem is it's soft, it's very porous, and it gets blotchy stain quite often. The other problem is it varies so drastically in color. You can go from green, which was the heart of the tree, to white at the other end, and that variation in color doesn't give you a consistent stain.
Right. Woodworkers love poplar. Finishers hate it.
Yes.
Definitely a paint-grade wood. Finally,
yes.
Let's talk about pine.
Mm-hmm.
It's very common. It's a soft wood, and it sometimes can be tough to stain.
Yes.
You know, it's definitely way better to stain than poplar.
Yes,
you
it is.
Got to make that call. Choose pine. There are ways to deal with the blotchiness
mm-hmm.
that shows up in pine that will be much more effective than trying to use those same methods on poplar.
Right. Now, even though you may have all of these woods down in your mind, you know what you're going to choose. One more thing to consider when you're purchasing wood is you get what you pay for. There are really good woods out there, and then there are some really bad cuts of it. So, you know, if you're going to be staining it, maybe opt for something that's just a little bit more expensive because it's going to stain up just a little bit better for you.
Right. Now, the next thing we want to focus on to help you make sure that the next staining project you tackle turns out well on the Repcolite Home Improvement Show, because that's what we're all about.
Yes.
Helping people make sure their projects turn out well.
Yes, we like that.
And then helping them when they don't make
yes.
sure that they do
yes.
in the long run.
Turning it around.
The next thing you need to understand is the limitations of staining.
Mm-hmm.
You know, remember this. You're working with a natural substrate. You
yes.
know, there are variations that are just outside of your control. Cherry is a great example.
Yep.
Some boards get blotchy, like we said.
Mm-hmm.
Others don't. You can't control that.
Right.
You've also got knots and variations in color and other characteristics that just make finishing problematic, but which also add to the natural beauty of the wood. So just remember that. This is what it is. It's a natural substrate. All of this happens. You can't control it.
Right. And because of all of that, compromise is very important, and eventually it is going to be forced upon you whether you like it or not.
Right.
You cannot fight against all of these natural elements. Some things are just going to be what they are. And as soon as you abandon the idea that everything's going to be perfect, it's going to match exactly, the better off you'll be. You'll be so much happier. We'll just find that happy medium with you, and it'll look great. Trust us.
Right. And if you look at kitchen cabinets right now in your home, chances
mm-hmm.
are, if you've got oak or something, you'll see
slight variations.
Boards within there that are darker
yep.
and some that are lighter. That's what we're talking about.
Yes.
The overall look is consistent.
Mm-hmm.
But board to board, sometimes there's variation. We do see customers get hung up on that board to board variation, and they drive themselves crazy, and it can't be controlled.
Right. Along the same line, it is absolutely critical that you set realistic expectations when you're staining something. As homeowners, there are only so many tools and products available to you. But a professional uses all kinds of extra things. You know, they can spray stuff out. They can use toners and dyes and all these processes that get a much more uniform look. So that's something you have to take into consideration when you're staining something.
This is something that really does annoy people, and they get very frustrated.
Yeah.
And it just drags their project down because they look at their cabinet doors
mm-hmm.
with these beautiful glazes and you know, toners and all of
right.
this.
Processes.
And it just looks great.
Mm-hmm.
And then they want to stain a little desk or something to be in the same room, and they can't make it happen with a one coat stain. And it's never going to happen.
Right.
And that's what we want to help you understand right now. It's just set realistic expectations. Understand that we can get you really close. We can make sure it blends, make sure it looks as close as possible. But the depth and the clarity that you sometimes get on a professional finish just isn't something that you can achieve just with a wiping stain and some polyurethane.
Right.
If you do need it to be exact, you're probably going to need to hire somebody to get there.
Right. And just remember the limitations of the wood that you're actually using. You know, we can help get you started in the right direction, but it just depends on what the wood will allow us and you to do to get that finished result.
Well, there is a lot more that we could cover, but we are pretty much out of time. The big thing that we want to stress is just before you start any project, any staining project, come into Repcolite or Port City Paints and we'll help you figure out what you need to do.
Yes.
You know, if you want to bring in the wood that you're working on, the color you want to get to,
mm-hmm.
we'll help you figure out the steps and what's needed to get you there. Better yet, if you want to be working ahead and kind of planning ahead, before you even buy the wood
mm-hmm.
for that next project, stop in with the color you want to have,
yep.
the color you want to end up with. Show us any Repco Light store, any yep. Port City Paint store. We do this all the time. Well, there's only one Port City Paint store.
Yes,
that's in
there's
Muskegon.
Only one.
But stop in, show us the color you want to get to,
mm-hmm.
and we can make a wood recommendation.
Yeah, we can tell you what type of wood is going to get you the closest to the target that you're seeking. And we do it quite often, so we can help you get there.
It's what we do.
It is what we do. All right, winter's coming, and if you've been thinking about getting a snowblower, you're in luck, because up next, we have Larry Bergman in the studio, and he's going to help us find just the right one. Stay tuned.
Helping you turn your house into your dream home. This is the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, presented by Benjamin Moore on News Radio Wood 1300 and 106.9 FM.
Well, we've had our first snow of the year, the first, you know, measurable snow anyway.
Yes.
And that has me itching to get outside and use my new snowblower because I bought that thing last year and I love it. I'm Dan Hansen.
And I'm Betsy Thompson. And I am less than eager to get out and use my shovel. And you told me that I couldn't run a snowblower because I'm a girl.
No. No, that is not what I said. I basically said that you can run any snowblower you want because
uh-huh.
you're a girl.
Right.
We have a guest. Let's just get to the guest.
All right.
I don't want to fight.
Yeah, we've got Larry Bergman from Bergman Power Equipment on the phone with us, and we're going to pick his brain for a few minutes about snowblowers. Larry, thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's great to see that winter wonderland we're having outside.
Yes,
excellent.
It is. Now, Larry, I need a snowblower, and I have no idea where to start. There are so many brands, different types, so many sizes. How do you help someone like me narrow this down and find the right one?
Well, I think the first place, and you hit it right on the head, is to talk about brands. What brand do I go after?
Mm-hmm.
And because there's so many of them out there.
Right.
And my caution to everyone is pick one of the major brands, because then you know you're going to have the availability of parts and service. Many of the really cheap off brands that aren't familiar names, you're going to have trouble finding parts and finding service for them. After that, you kind of need to decide, okay, single stage, two stage, how big, those kind of questions come up.
And how do I know which stage? Because I've heard Dan talk about it, and like he said, he thought that the single stage was terrible. And
so you assume it's awesome just because you go with the opposite of what I suggest.
Well, and you said that you were thinking a two stage.
Yes, I was wrong.
Well, so help walk me through this. How do I know which one I need?
A lot of it boils down to what are your objectives? What do you need to do with it? For instance, some people have plow service, and mm-hmm. so really all they want to do is get out there and clean up the stuff after the plow service is left. In that case, probably just a small to medium size single stage will do.
Mm-hmm.
If on the other hand, you're going to clear the entire drive, then we start talking about, okay, how long is the drive and how wide is it? And are there other areas you're doing besides the drive? Do you have sidewalks? Do you have turnarounds? Try to get an idea of how much snow the person really needs to move.
Okay, I have to go up a really huge hill. Is there one that's better for going up a really giant hill?
You're
going
to want one that's self-propelled.
I want
I know
a plow service.
Dan, you hit it right on. You hit it right on the nose there. That's the biggest discriminator there. If you're going to have to go up a hill,
uh-huh.
then you're really going to want to. Then you're really going to want to do a two-stage, because two-stage are self-propelled.
Oh, okay, good to know.
Now, yeah, with
single stage,
she would go down the hill really fast. But going up could be a real struggle.
Great.
Right. Now, some of the single stages actually, they clear closer to the ground. The paddles will actually hit the ground. They tend to pull the blower a little bit, but you're primarily pushing the snowblower.
Right.
So that's a discriminator right there. If you've got a large area and you're going to be going up and down hills, then you definitely want to go with a two-stage.
Now, I noticed with my two-stage, because that's what I had previously, and I got to the point that if I would get heavier snow or, you know, slushy snow, not terribly deep, but, you know, a couple inches or so, that thing couldn't do anything with it. Now, maybe mine was just old. My single-stage, I have a Toro, and I really love that thing. That
mm-hmm.
chucks that snow. It really doesn't matter how heavy it is. It goes through it pretty easily. Now, was my two-stage just mm-hmm. old and tired, or is that common?
Probably, Dan, because the two stages over the last probably 6 to 8 years have changed significantly. That, you know, a two stage means there's an auger.
Right.
It kind of chews the snow up and brings it into the second stage, which is a blower. Today, okay. Those blowers spin much faster than they used to, so they throw the snow farther.
Okay.
And they can handle the wet and heavy snow better than the old ones used to be able to.
Because mine was terrible.
Well, and that was my other concern, yeah. Was once the snowplow comes by and it's all the wet and heavy stuff at the bottom of my driveway, am I going to be stuck?
Yeah, the two-stage definitely cuts through that wet and heavy stuff at the end of the driveway better. The other differences, a couple of them are that a double stage, a two-stage is generally going to have a throwing distance in the neighborhood of 35 to 45 feet,
okay.
Where a single stage will throw at 20 to 30 feet. So there's quite a difference in mm-hmm. the throwing distance.
Right.
Okay, what about throwing upwards? Because once you get so high, then the thing really has to throw it up and over a pile. Is there a difference?
Well, you know, that's actually the advantage of a snow blower over a snow plow. Because when you're using a snow plow, you tend to build up banks.
Uh-huh.
And then the banks drift in, and then you got to try to push those banks back or push it over the banks. With a snow thrower, you're actually throwing snow farther away from the driveway. So you don't get that bank buildup.
All right.
Does
that make sense to you?
That makes sense. We're talking with Larry Bergman on the Repco Light Home Improvement Show. I almost forgot who we were. That's terrible. Talking about snow blowers. And I guess I was thinking about my next question. And I guess I'm going to put you on the spot with the last minute or so that we've got. You know, price-wise, a two-stage blower is going to be more expensive, correct?
Well, yeah. So if you look at a single stage, you're going to start out in the $350 range, and they can go up to the $700 range, you know, approximately.
Mm-hmm.
The entry point on a good two stage, you're going to be $799, basically $800, and they're going to go up as high as you want to go because there's a lot of options.
Okay. So I'm interested in this $799 entry point. What is that? If you're just tell me, what are we talking about? What brand? And what am I getting?
So basically, what you're talking about is a 24-inch with probably a 7-horsepower engine, self-prepared. You know, so you've got propelled, so you've got multiple speeds forward. You've got a speed reverse, so it's power driven both directions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very popular machine for the average homeowner. That's a very adequate machine.
All right, you have those in stock. Or do you order
Yes, we
that?
Do, okay. Both in a Toro. No, we have those in stock, both in a Toro and a Husqvarna, both excellent brands.
And those are, what other brands do you carry, or is that what you've got?
We also carry Simplicity.
Okay.
Simplicity's entry-level machine has a few more options on it, mm-hmm. So it's a little bit pricier. Not a lot, you know, $100.
Sure.
But very good machines,
all right.
All three brands.
So you carry all of that. You've got the single-stage snowblowers there as well at Bergman. You've got
Absolutely.
All of that, right? Cool. And I imagine you're going to be seeing some business come as the
yeah.
weather starts to degrade. You get the people who put it off that are going to be scrambling at the next warning
yeah,
that there's big snow coming.
I think we're all born procrastinators, so a lot of people wait till the snow gets here and then they say, I need my snowblower.
Exactly.
Yep.
Well, Larry, that's the time
and
we've
we're
got.
Here.
We thank you so much for taking time to call us and kind of direct us in what we need. If anybody needs to get a hold of you at Bergman Power Equipment, how's the best way to do that?
Hey, give us a call, 453-9581. We can talk to you about options or come out and see us. 4073 Remembrance Road in Walker, just a little ways from Wilson Avenue.
All right. Larry Bergman from Bergman Power Equipment, thanks again for taking time to be with us.
Thank you. Enjoy your day.
After the break, it's time to do a little Christmas shopping, and we've got some ideas for the DIYer in your life. Dan and I made a list, and we'll see whose is better when we come back. Stick around.
Helping you turn your house into your dream home. This is the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, presented by Benjamin Moore on News Radio Wood 1300 and 106.9 FM.
Well, here we are, fully up to our neck in the Christmas shopping season.
Oh, yeah.
Love it or hate it. There's a lot of people that are in each of those camps.
Yes.
Love it or hate it, we're here.
Yes.
I'm Dan Hansen.
And I'm Betsy Thompson. Yes, buying Christmas gifts absolutely stresses people out to the max. I mean, they don't know if they're coming or going, and it's just a headache. But luckily, we are here to help with that today.
We're here to fix every problem everybody has.
Yes, from staining to gift shopping, we've got it covered.
Anyway, Betsy and I have each picked five different things that we think are the best home improvement gifts out there in various price ranges.
Yes.
And let's start with the very first category, and we're going to start low.
Yeah.
So for all the kids looking to get something for mom or dad in the $10 range, I'm going to recommend a tape measure.
Okay.
Now, the best reviewed one that I found from a number of websites is made by a manufacturer called Trust.
So you trust it'll work?
I trust it will work. I trust that it will be as good as they say it will be. Anyway, it's got a rugged tape that's lightweight.
Okay.
So the tape is pretty heavy duty. Mm-hmm. It will stretch out to about 8.5 feet without collapsing on itself.
Yeah.
Other ones will go longer. Mm-hmm. But the cool thing about this one is that the tape, because it's lightweight, you're not going to cut your finger when it goes back in.
Oh,
slides
that
back
is
in.
Nice.
That's nice.
Especially for someone like you who bleeds a lot.
I bleed a lot. The other thing that I like about it is it's got an auto locking mechanism. Put it out to the length you want and it stays.
Right.
Until you hit the little trigger to pull it back in.
Those
are cool things.
That is cool.
What's your $10 gift?
My $10 gift is a bucket organizer.
Boring.
It is not boring. That is one of the greatest things.
I don't even have a bucket.
Okay, well, you can get a bucket for just barely over $10 with the bucket organizer.
That sounds good.
Yeah, it's great for organizing all of your tools. And then instead of carrying a big bulky toolbox, you can carry this around. It has all the little tools that you need. And for people like you who scatter tools everywhere and then can't find them, put them back in the organizer and move to the next area of the project. You can carry bigger tools, you know, drill, extension cord, things like that.
In the bucket itself.
In the bucket. It really is handy. Or you can use it for paint supplies, brushes, tape, things like that. Just corrals everything.
All right. So that's cool. That's the $10 range.
That's the
$10
range.
Now let's bump it up to the right around $25 range.
Mm-hmm. I'm suggesting a multi-tool. Swiss Army makes one. Gerber makes one. Of course, Leatherman makes one.
Gerber makes it for babies, right? They do the baby food and then the Gerber multi-tool for opening the baby food.
Right. No, we're not going to go with that. This is one of those things that I can't be without. It's always in my car. I go everywhere with it. Usually in about the $25 range, yes, you can get one that's $100 that has all kinds of tools, but about the $25 range, you're looking at, of course, the regular pliers, wire cutters, a knife, screwdriver, Phillips and flathead, the things that you need in a pinch.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
What I recommended is not quite as flashy or as exciting. I stuck with practical.
Of course, that was
my way to go. That's how I look at life. So I recommended a stud finder.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many times I've run into trying to hang something, like a TV or putting shelves up, where I think I've got it all measured out correctly.
And you're going and knocking on the wall, aren't you?
I'm knocking on the wall, trying to find these things. And then at work here, we were working on something in the studio, and I found a stud finder in one of the rooms next door to us. So I
borrowed it.
Oh my goodness, how fast and easy to locate what I wanted. Is it a flashy gift? No. Is it going to be handy? Yes.
We're talking about Christmas gifts on the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, and they're for the DIYer in your life. Dan and I have each made a list, and we're checking it twice. And now, what's your under $50 gift, Dan?
My under $50 gift is an orbital sander.
Ooh, that is a good one.
Because this is something that gets used, again, all the time. Can't recommend that enough. If you don't have one, that's definitely something to think about.
All right. So my $50 gift, this is something that I haven't tried, but I really want to get some now. They're called vamp pliers. They're screw extraction
That is
pliers.
So fun to say. Vamp pliers.
I know. And they're really cool.
Why do they
cool.
call them that, though?
Because they...
Do they draw a lot of blood?
Well, it looks like they would.
Would I pinch the meaty part of my palm?
Well, here. We're going to put a picture up in our show notes, but I want to show you a picture of them because look at the jaws in those things.
Okay.
They have all these serrated little teeth that you just hook on to a strip screw, and it's amazing.
Teeth in all different directions,
right.
too. Teeth
so
on the sides, teeth on the front.
It's not like normal pliers.
Right, if you get your palm with this.
Well, and I'm thinking, you know, I've watched you use a drill, and you set the drill bit down, and you use the little easy out things, and then you can't find the drill bit to come back.
Yeah.
This will be so much easier.
It's always about something dumb I do. I can put that in my bucket.
Well, yeah, and the people that use them said even if the head is stripped out on the screw, you know, completely gone, you can
it'll still grip it.
Yeah, if you can get just enough to grip, it'll pull the whole thing out.
That's a really good one. So far, I think you're winning. So let's move on to the around $100 category.
Yes.
And yeah, this isn't going to blow any doors off. My poor Christmas people who I'm buying for. I still think it's a great gift, though, and it's a high-quality jigsaw. If you're not sure what I'm talking about, a jigsaw is the handheld saw. It's got a reciprocating blade. It goes up and down, and you cut all kinds of curves and different shapes with it. You can switch the blades out and cut metal. You will use this all the time. There's so many different uses for it. Mm-hmm. Get a good one. Just make sure that you've got something that has variable speeds. Mm-hmm. You want to be able to change the blades easily.
Yep.
You know, so look into those kinds of things. The one I have needs an Allen wrench to change the blades, and I wish I had something that didn't require that as they make them now.
Well, you know, I liked your idea about the tape measure, but I'm going to one-up you.
You got a $100 tape measure?
It's made by Bosch. It's the GLM 40 laser tape measure. It measures.
What if I look right into the laser, though?
Well, then you'll be blinded, and your kids will have to do all the work for you.
Then I'll trip on my saw.
Yes, you will. Cut off your toes. It measures 135 feet. It does area, distance, length, volume, and continuous measurements. And it'll also do addition and subtraction for you to help you find just the right measurements.
Will it tell me where I left my pencil?
That is the one thing. See, if you had the bucket organizer, you wouldn't need to worry about that. It's pocket size. Some people say that that's too small, but really...
I have small childlike pockets. Will it fit in those, or does it have a clip?
Well, it does come with a little pouch. It also comes with targets, so if you're measuring something that...
It comes with its own pouch?
Yes.
So I look like I've got like handcuffs or something cool on my belt?
Yes, it does.
I love that.
Plus... I saw somebody who was measuring couches when they went furniture shopping. You just take these little targets so that it has something to bounce off of, and you can measure a couch instead of taking your tape measure. This is smaller,
so it will
more
measure
compact.
Things like that. I wondered about that.
And you can do like the height of a wall or the height of a building.
That would be really easy with that.
Standing on the ground.
Very
it's
cool.
really cool.
Don't point the laser at helicopters or airplanes.
Or in your
that
eyes.
That is a federal offense.
Yes.
And I've seen videos on Facebook. They find you very quickly.
Yes.
All right. So let's get to the last category, the $100 or more for the people with money coming out of their ears.
Right.
If that's you, and maybe it's my children.
You're going to hope it's your children.
Hopefully they're listening. A drill driver and impact driver combo kit is my number one recommendation. If you're not sure what an impact driver is, it basically looks like a standard drill driver.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of a keyless chuck, it's got a collet that accepts hex shanked driver bits.
Yep.
So it's not for drilling.
No.
It's really made for driving screws, and it does that better than anything else out there.
Mm-hmm.
It uses a combination of rotation and then concussive blows, so it is a little bit loud.
Yeah, you hated it when you first used it.
I hated it at first because it was so loud I thought I was breaking stuff.
Right.
But it will drive screws through the thickest, densest woods with ease.
Yes.
It is remarkable. Remarkable.
Yes.
You've got to have one of these.
Right.
Why do I want the combo? Because I want to be able to drill and do things like that.
Right.
And why not just get that added in?
Right.
Works great. That's my big gift recommendation.
Okay.
What's yours?
All right. I almost picked that exact same thing. I had it on my list and then I changed it at the last
minute.
Because
you knew I would pick it.
Yes, I kind of assumed that you would pick it. But also because I found this really cool thing. Now, this is something that can go over $100 or it can actually go under $100. Mm-hmm. It kind of depends. They're called man crates.
Am I man enough for a man crate?
Well, hold on. Now, these are the most funny thing I have ever seen. They come with different things in them. You can get one that's make your own knife, make your own folding knife, do some pipe bending and things like that. Or if you have someone in your life who wants to be a chef, they have a chef one that comes with a knife and a cutting board and a pack of Band-Aids for people like Dan who tend to cut themselves.
Do they really come with Band-Aids?
It does.
Okay.
And they come in different types of boxes.
So it's like a...
So most of them come...
A craft kit for a dude?
Kind of. Now it'll tell you if it comes in a regular cardboard box or if it comes in the crate. If it comes in the crate... The best part is watching somebody try to get into the crate because they put them down so tight, all of the sides, and they come with this little mini crowbar. Good luck watching someone
so
get into it.
So it's meant to be annoying?
It is. It is hilarious to watch people get into them.
A man crate.
It's called a man crate. Go and look it up. They are really cool.
Okay. Well, there you go. There are a number of gifts that we recommend. I like all of those.
I do, too.
I don't want to be frustrated opening my present, and I don't want to be bleeding when I'm done. So I'm going to have somebody help me open my man crate.
We'll get you the one.
See, I'm not man enough to have a man crate. Is there, like, a junior version?
We'll just get you the one that comes with a cardboard box.
All right. That's good. Yeah. I hope I don't get a paper cut.
Yeah, me too.
But one last gift that you can never go wrong with is a gift card or a gift certificate from Repco Light Paints.
Right.
It is the gift that everybody wants this year. All the kids are clamoring for it. Check it out. Ask us in the store. We'll gladly hook you up with something. Coming up in just a few minutes, almost everybody has a nightmare story about removing wallpaper. But here's the deal. With the right information and using the right techniques, you might be able to take almost all of the pain out of a typically terrible job. We'll tell you what you need to know when we come back. Stay tuned.
If you want to take your DIY skills up a rung, the Repco Light Home Improvement Show is here to give you a boost on News Radio Wood 1300 and 106.9 FM.
Now, all right, Betsy, how many times have you stripped wallpaper?
Quite a few.
And how many of those times were fun? Fun.
They were fun once I figured out how to do it. The first time was miserable. It was, because when you can get wallpaper to come off, it's oddly pleasing pulling it off the wall.
That is true. When it works, it's great.
Yes.
I'm Dan Hansen.
And I'm Betsy Thompson. And yes, it isn't always fun, but you know, it could be even worse if you don't know how to get it off.
It definitely can be worse if you don't know how to get it off. So that's what we're going to focus on in this last segment. We've got a lot to cover, so we're going to go as quickly as we can and still be legible. Legible is something that you can
understandable?
Read. Yes. Yes. We want to be understandable. I was an English major, for heaven's sake, and speaking is not my thing.
Clearly not.
Anyway, let's talk about the tools that you'll need for a project like this. And we're going to start here because the good news is, with wallpaper stripping, the tools that you need to amass are pretty simple and pretty inexpensive.
Right.
You really need to make sure that you get a 6-inch joint or putty knife, mm-hmm. you know, one for whoever is going to be working with you,
yep.
scraping. You want to use that for the scraper.
Yes.
You want to make sure that you have a paper tiger tool.
Yep.
That's something that we'll describe later on, mm-hmm. so don't worry about that yet. You'll need wallpaper stripper.
This is the key.
Right. This is the key. And there's any number of concoctions here that people use.
Mm-hmm.
You could use DIF,
yep.
which is something that we sell, DIF.
Yep.
It's a specific wallpaper stripper. Or you could use vinegar and warm water.
Mm-hmm.
Other people have used hot water, fabric softener, and vinegar. And DIF. Any
right.
kind of combination.
Yeah.
Really, the effectiveness of these stripping solutions is going to be back down to the prep work that was done on that wall before the paper was put up.
Right.
The glue that was used, things like that.
Mm-hmm. And to help you with this project, we recommend that you get a spray bottle or a pump-up garden sprayer type of thing to apply the product. And you also want to make sure that you're covering your floors before you go and spray this stuff and make a mess all over the wall. So get some plastic or drop cloths, and some extra towels would not be a bad idea.
Right.
So once you've amassed your tools, it's time to actually get to work and start stripping the wallpaper. The very first step in this is just to test the wallpaper and see how really stuck it is. You know,
you might get really lucky.
Well, you might. I have gotten lucky before. York Wallpaper, it's one of the wallpaper companies, they make a product called Sure Strip, and it comes off unbelievably well. It comes off in big sheets, and that's why they make it, so that it's easy to put up and easy to pull back down.
So check that. The other thing that you might find is you start peeling at the paper, and you might be able to get that face paper off.
Right.
If you can get that off, and even if you leave the backer
mm-hmm.
on the wall, that's really good. With wallpaper, most of the time, water in your stripping solution and mm-hmm. all of that isn't going to penetrate through that face paper.
Right.
And so you've got to score it and mm-hmm. do all kinds of things. If
right.
you can get it off and expose that backer paper and then soak that down, it's going to go really fast.
Right. So if you can't get that face paper off very easily, that's where the paper tiger comes in. This is a scoring tool. You don't
with the best name in the industry.
You just like that it's called a tiger.
I love that it's called a paper tiger.
Of course,
I'm
you
a paper
do.
Tiger.
Oh, good grief!
I think that means I've got a lot of roar, but not a lot of anything else.
Oh, okay then.
I think so, right?
Sure.
Somebody Google that.
Okay.
I wish we had somebody.
I'll
doing,
let you Google that yeah. while I tell them what a paper tiger is.
Go for it.
Now, a paper tiger is just going to lightly score the wallpaper for you. You don't need to put a lot of pressure, or you can damage the drywall. It's just going to put a bunch of little puncture holes in that face paper and allow the solution that you're using to strip the paper to soak in behind and really get at the paste that's holding the paper on.
Right. And according to Wikipedia, a paper tiger is basically what I said, something that seems threatening but is ineffectual.
Oh, that is you.
Yep. But the paper tiger itself really does work.
Yes, it absolutely
effectual.
Does. Yes. If you can't get a paper tiger, or if you're a little nervous that you're going to damage your drywall, because I have met a lot of people like that who are a little afraid to use
it. You won't if you use it right.
You
but
won't.
But if you're nervous.
But if you're nervous, you can always use some very coarse sandpaper. That'll work too. Just make sure you put a fair amount of pressure on it, scuff that surface up, and you're good to go.
Right. Now, once you've done that, it's time to protect the floor. Like we mentioned, we're going to be putting a lot of wallpaper stripping solution on the walls. Mm-hmm. So put the plastic down on the floor, roll up some towels, and set them along the edge. And just make sure you're aware that the surface could get a little slippery.
Right. You're listening to the Repco Light Home Improvement Show, and we are talking about everyone's least favorite job, stripping wallpaper. Or it seems like everyone's least favorite
job. Definitely on the list.
Yeah. So now we're at the part where you're actually going to put whatever solution you're deciding to use on the wall. And I have found the easiest way to do this is with some sort of pump-up sprayer. We have a small wallpaper pump-up sprayer.
It's more like
a
handheld thing.
Right. But you can use a garden spray. It works great because your hand doesn't get tired from a regular squeeze bottle.
If you have to use the squeeze bottle, that will work. The big thing here is just to do whatever solution you choose, mix it out according to the instructions, mm-hmm. and spray it on the wall and let it sit.
Yes.
If you work it too fast or try to get on it too fast, it's a chore.
Right.
If you let it wait and just mm-hmm. let it sit and let it work and then reapply and keep it wet.
Yes, you have to keep it wet. That's the key.
You are going to have great results. And I know this is counterintuitive. And I know spraying the wall and not doing something feels mm-hmm. like you're slacking off, that you're taking a break, that you're slowing the process down or the project down.
Right.
You're not.
Yep.
Do that. Let it sit. Spray it. Let it sit. Let that solution work. Then start scraping.
Right.
And if you need to reapply, you are going to speed the process up by letting it sit.
Absolutely. That is the key to this whole thing. So once you start scraping some of that off with your 6-inch knife, we do recommend the 6-inch joint knife because they have those scrapers, but a lot of people tend to gouge the walls
with
those.
Right. They have razor blades on wallpaper scrapers, and they seem like in theory they'd work well, but generally people damage the walls.
I have done damage with those things.
Yeah, it's tough to work with. A putty knife is just a little easier to control.
Yes.
So scrape the paper off the wall, get the scraps off the wall, mm-hmm. and then you need to assess the situation and figure out where you're at. If the paper came off easily and you didn't damage the wall, mm-hmm. then you just need to do a final cleaning and move on to paint.
Right.
If it put up a fight and you actually pulled some of that face paper of the drywall off, mm-hmm. which happens,
yeah.
you're going to want to make sure you seal those areas in with a product called Guards Problem Wall Surface Sealer.
Right.
And it's made for areas or situations like this where you've damaged drywall. The problem is if you wash the wall with that exposed backer paper of the drywall, or if you possibly spackle over those areas, mm-hmm. the moisture could get behind the face paper that's still on the wall and cause it to pucker.
Right.
So go ahead and pre-seal all these damaged spots with Guards,
mm-hmm.
and then you need to go over and wash the wall one last time.
Right. Make sure you get all of that paste off of there before you do anything else. Then go through, put your spackling on or whatever you're going to do to patch these
joint
holes
compound
up.
Or whatever.
Yep, depending on how big the holes are.
And then you get to give it one more coat of primer.
Yes, you do. And again, you can use the Guards over top of that to seal everything up.
Right.
If you didn't have to patch any holes, you can use oil-based primer over top to seal in any remaining paste that might still be left.
Or you could use the Guards again.
Right.
Either way, Guards is nice because it's water-based,
yes.
and it will seal in that paste residue, even though it is a water-based product.
Right.
Otherwise, you could go to oil. The reason you need to seal in that paste mm-hmm. is, like we said earlier, the water in the paint can reactivate it, and you get a texturing problem.
It's
that
a mess. I've done that.
You can't fix it.
Nope.
Short of scraping it off while it's wet, or mm-hmm. letting it dry and sanding it. So you don't want to do that.
Right.
So the primer is a really nice insurance step that will just keep you safe.
Right.
Prime it, and then you're finally ready for paint, and you should be good to go. If you run stuck, call any Repco Light or Port City Paint store. Stop out. We'll walk you through the project and help you get really good results as quickly as possible.
Absolutely.
And another brilliant episode of the Repco Light Home Improvement Show is in the books.
Yes.
You can listen to past episodes online, and that's all at repcolight.com.
And you can also follow us on social media, Facebook, Pinterest, things like that. We sometimes post contests on Facebook, so you're going to want to be checking that out.
Finally, no matter what you decide to do today, make a trip to Repco Light part of your fun. Because really, there's nothing more fun than hanging out at Repco Light. We've got stores in Grand Rapids, Jenison, Holland, Muskegon, and a brand new location in Kalamazoo on Gull Road.
Yes, we do.
And coming up at the start of the year, we're very excited to be opening a new store on East Fulton in Grand Rapids. That's going to be a lot of fun.
By downtown for anyone who's in East Grand Rapids.
Yeah, that's going to be cool.
Yeah.
I'm Dan Hansen.
And I'm Betsy Thompson. Remember, if you're about to lose your DIY sanity, we can help you fix that crazy.
And we can help you be the hit gift giver at your party this year.
Man crate, here you come.
Yeah. Thanks for listening.